This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think what we need to do is really focus on these federal protections and focus on these little creeks in our neighborhoods. These aren't insignificant pieces of habitat.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we highlight a scenario that's constantly being played out in cities all over the world as humankind continues to encroach upon wildlife habitat. This time, however, the dynamic is a little bit unusual, as large Chinook salmon are finding their way into small urban creeks in downtown San Jose, California. Today, we're speaking with environmental writer and fisherman Jeremy Miller as he recounts a piece he recently penned for Sierra Magazine. We try to unearth the mystery of how these fish ended up in a major metropolitan area, look at federal protections which differ based upon a fish's origin, and discuss the role of the local water district in all of this. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jeremy Miller. He's an environmental writer, and his latest piece for Sierra Magazine is entitled Against the Current. Jeremy, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So what brought you to this piece about Chinook salmon in the urban areas like in San Jose? And explain why this is noteworthy.
Well, I found out about this by accident. And I'm a fisherman. I follow the news about fish. I'm always checking the hydrographs or the creeks that I fish on. And I was working on another story on the peninsula and heard through a source that these huge fish were showing up in tiny urban creeks in San Jose. And I was just floored. I actually was sort of in disbelief. I had heard, on occasion, you'd have a random stray salmon show up on the Guadalupe River in San Jose. But what I was hearing from my sources was that, dozens of huge Chinook salmon were showing up in creeks no more than 5 or 6 feet wide. And like I said, I was a little bit in disbelief, so I immediately got in my car and met with a guy named Roger Castillo who showed me around, and that was the case. I mean, these huge, and for those of you who don't know what Chinook salmon are like, these are, 30 and 40 inch fish, 20 to 30 pound fish.
Like something that you'd get like deep sea fishing, that size.
Yeah, they spend a portion of their life in the ocean and then come back into these creeks to spawn. And it was like seeing sort of, a whale or something in a swimming pool. It was that jarring.
I was wondering, reading about Roger Castillo, you're explaining how he's looking for these things from his truck, and then he sees one and he pulls over and gets the fish. And I was just like trying to connect. I was like, wow, that guy must have really good eyesight. But when you see the picture, you can understand how he could see it from his truck. They're massive.
Yeah. Well, and Roger is a self-trained naturalist, has grown up, lived his whole life in San Jose, spends all of his time rooting around in nooks and crannies in San Jose looking for wildlife. He knows where the fish go. So we were driving in his pickup truck on this levee above a creek called Silver Creek, which is 5-10 minutes from downtown San Jose. And lo and behold, there are, we saw 3 or 4 of these salmon in a tiny creek. And I mean, for those of your listeners who know a little bit about San Jose's creeks, these are also places where, you have large unhoused populations living. There's stormwater drainage that are putting a lot of garbage and debris into the creeks. So these aren't like Alaskan rivers or something. These aren't pristine mountain streams. These are, urban creeks with a lot of sort of impacts to them. So, and that made this even more fascinating and interesting that these fish were returning to these places to spawn.
And why is this an environmental issue worth covering? Besides the oddity of it, there are lessons to be taken from this as well, aren't there?
Well, one thing is that there's some scientific debate about whether or not salmon were native to those creeks. And this, I think, according to one of my sources in the story named Rick Landman, who's an ecologist, there's strong historic evidence that these salmon have always been there. There was an archaeological survey done at a place, Mission Santa Clara, where they unearthed salmon bones from the early 1800s. So one thing that's happening is that these fish are proving that they're coming back to where they've sort of long been absent. Another thing it's telling us is sort of about the cycles of climate change, that in the dry years, in the period of drought in the 2010s, when there wasn't a lot of water, the returns of these fish were very minor. You'd have a random fish or two show up, and ecologists assume these were just random stray fish, lost fish, accidentally making their way into these creeks. But what we're seeing now, we've had this string of three wet years, and these creeks are gorged with water. So this year, volunteers with the South Bay Clean Creeks Coalition, which is a citizen group that monitors the creeks in that area, counted over 600 fish. And that's sort of a minimum. Those were fish that people saw. Roger Castillo, the guy that was showing me around San Jose, said for every fish we count, there are probably 8 to 10 that we don't see. So, I mean, we're talking thousands of fish returning to these little ditches in San Jose to spawn. So what it tells you is about sort of resilience, the resilience of nature. If we give nature and fish like salmon habitat, give them enough water to do their thing, they'll return. So it's an inspiring story. And it's also one where, what I've realized in my reporting down there is there's a lot more sort of simple things we could be doing to help these fish along.
Yes, you quote Scott McBain, who's a geomorphologist, saying there's nothing more inspiring than seeing these large fish a few yards from a Google headquarters. So he's fascinated by that dichotomy. But you also explore this fin. I forget the name of the type of fin, which designates whether or not the salmon is a farmed salmon or a completely wild salmon. And that really matters from a business standpoint as well. Why don't you explain?
Yeah, so when a fish is born in a hatchery, the workers at the hatchery clip a little piece of tissue between the dorsal fin, which is the fish that comes up off the back, and the tail fin. It's called an adipose fin. And it's the fish don't really need it to maneuver. It's sort of an extra bit. But what it does when they clip that, if a fish biologist captures that fish, they'll know it's hatchery born. Conversely, fish that don't have that clipped adipose fin are most likely wild born fish. And so the controversy in San Jose hinges on this adipose fin. The Santa Clara Valley Water District, which is the entity that oversees management of these creeks, their claim is that these fish are hatchery strays that are accidentally swimming up into these San Jose creeks, and they're saying it's not something that would naturally happen. It's something that's being caused by the release of large numbers of hatchery fish into the ocean and then them returning to the bay and like getting lost and swimming up into those creeks. However, a few of the fish, I think there was a survey of 26 fish. Of those fish, 22 had clipped adipose fins, but 4 had their adipose fins intact. And that tells ecologists that some of these fish are wild that some of them are actually laying their eggs and being reared in these creeks and then swimming out to sea and then coming back.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jeremy Miller. He is an environmental writer, and his latest piece for the Sierra Club magazine is entitled Against the Current. So it's still kind of odd that a fish is a fish, and like these hatchery fish can still mate and create healthy ecosystems, but it's because of the federal protection laws that it's become an issue, correct?
Right. Well, so this is where it gets a little bit more complicated. So Rick Landman, again, the researcher who found the bones of the fish at Mission Santa Clara, sent off some samples of fish to researchers at UC Davis. And what he sent off specifically were the eyeballs and these little bones in the ears of the fish called otoliths. And by examining the isotope ratios in the eyeballs and the ear bones of the fish, they can tell not only whether a fish was hatchery reared or wild, but whether or not what river it came from. Different rivers give different isotopic signatures, and one or two of the fish in this sample came back showing signatures of the Russian River in the North Bay.
One of these fish that was recovered in San Jose.
Yeah, one of the fish in San Jose was born in the Russian River, and that is a federally protected threatened population. So Rick Landman is pointing out that not only are some of these fish wild-born, but some of them belong to populations that are federally protected. So I interviewed a biologist at the Santa Clara Valley Water Agency named Clayton Leal, and his line was that the fish are, they're sort of an anomaly, that because of the hydrology of these rivers, the way that the rainy season comes and the, you know, sort of low flows at certain times of year, that these are just sort of accidental fish, and that it's sort of a distraction to look at the salmon. His claim is that the native fish that lives there is actually another salmonid called a steelhead, which is a rainbow trout that does a similar thing to the Chinook. They're born, they go to sea, they come back, they lay their eggs. But he said that the Chinook salmon are not native, and that they're hatchery fish, and therefore, you know, that the implication is that the Santa Clara Valley Water District shouldn't be liable to release more water to protect them.
That's what I wanted to understand a little bit more about, is what is their financial incentive in protecting their own interests? Like, so they don't want to have to do what you just explained. They don't want to just release more water. Why is that?
Well, so yeah, if the fish are determined to be from a federally listed threatened population, then the entity that, in this case, you know, the Santa Clara Valley Water District, which oversees management of these creeks, would be responsible for providing adequate flows of water for the fish to spawn. They're not there to necessarily protect ecosystems. They're there to deliver water to residents, to industrial users, to farms in that area.
And how much money are we talking about that this would cost them? Like millions and millions of dollars, or?
It's millions. So this is the part of the story, like I said, I don't know how much I could tell you because I haven't dug into this very deeply. But yeah, I mean, it's big. It's, you know, they're a water district that serves two million people in that area. And every drop of water, as we know in California, is important and accounted for. And So if they're being forced to release more water from their dams at certain times a year, you know, that's water that potentially can't be delivered to residents or to sort of, you know, industrial users, businesses in the area. So yeah, it's a, you know, it's a conundrum. And so all the activists that I spoke with there really sort of hammered home this idea to me that, that water managers sort of look in the other way, that they, there's a general refusal to accept that not only that these fish are whether or not, you know, there's a general refusal to accept whether or not the fish are actually native here. There's a general refusal to accept that they're even here at all. You know, Clayton Leal acknowledged the presence of the fish, but said, you know, just sort of a weird curiosity. But others have been just told, nah, you know, nothing to see here, sort of. So.
In the morning, laughing happy fish heads. In the evening, floating in the soup.
Fish heads.
Ask a fish head anything you want to. They won't answer. They can't talk.
Fish heads, fish heads, roly poly fish heads, fish heads.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jeremy Miller, an environmental writer whose recent piece is in Sierra Magazine. You mentioned how this scientist from the water agency, Clayton Leal in San Jose, is a little reticent to admit that these Chinook salmon are wild and that their survival is an issue and that the water district could have a hand in helping them or hurting their future. It's kind of odd that a scientist would minimize this. This is the scientist from the water agency. I can only imagine that somebody on the business side of things would be even more dismissive of this. I can't help but think of what's happening at the EPA and at every level of our federal government right now, because we have these very intricate protections in place. From, you mentioned how the Russian River, those salmon are protected while this creek may not be. So that could be played out all over the country. And now all of a sudden, of course, we have the foxes guarding the hen house. As a fisherman and as an environmental writer, maybe you can give us a snapshot of how you see this kind of dynamic playing out on a local issue, state by state issue, and a federal issue.
Well, yeah. So at a local issue, at a local level, you know, salmon are interesting because they don't respect those sort of jurisdictions. They don't respect, you know, they don't care what's local, what's state, what's federal. They have their sort of the local stream where they spawn. They swim into the bay and then out to the ocean, right? I mean, they are a species that really challenges the status quo of the way that we design our cities, right? Our urban areas. So I guess at a local level, you know, what you're seeing in San Jose is the way we build our cities just sort of treats most of these creeks as sacrifice zones. Silver Creek that I mentioned is sort of an urban ditch. But a lot of it is concrete lined. It was created to funnel water off of sidewalks and into the ocean quickly. So at a local level, you know, if you want to start addressing what's going on, you've got to start looking at sort of urban stormwater design and figuring out new ways of envisioning this. At a state level, like you said, you've got fish coming from the Russian River down into San Jose, which I said, you know, as I mentioned, shows that salmon don't really have any sort of respect for our arbitrary designations. A salmon's going to go where a salmon's going to go. So dealing with that would require some coordination and acknowledgement, with Fish and Wildlife about, you know, what salmon are doing now. You know, the populations appear to be recovering, and they're surprising us. They're showing up in places that we wouldn't imagine. And at a federal level, you know, I think the interesting thing to me is that salmon fisheries, along with, you know, a lot of other commercial fisheries, are collapsing. But here, this is a success story. This is a rejuvenation. I feel like there's sort of a disconnect, you know, between, you know, sort of this bigger fisheries story and what the fish are actually doing. You know, it seems like if we've got salmon, you know, we're trying to protect the salmon fishery, we're trying to protect fishermen. If we want salmon, we need to protect the places where they're showing up and spawning, you know, unless we want to go to a completely artificial sort of farmed aquaculture model of raising salmon.
Can you expand a little bit on the collapsing fisheries? I know we did a piece about a surprising renaissance of a fishery, a cod fishery off Newfoundland. So you see these little glimmers of hope, if you will. But from the 9,000 foot view, things are not healthy for our planet's fisheries.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, yeah, salmon. If you want salmon, if you want anadromous fish, an anadromous fish is a fish that is born in freshwater, in a creek, and then spends part of its lifespan there, and then goes out to sea, and then comes back to lay its eggs. And so, if we want anadromous fish, we have to start thinking about these little watersheds. We have to protect those. Conversely, if we want to treat our creeks and, you know, like ditches, we're not going to have them. So part of this is really sort of rethinking our water management systems, the way that we, you know, the way that our cities interface with the natural world. But there are, you know, like there are glimmers of hope in Northern California. You've got dams coming down on the Klamath. In Washington, on the Elwha River, you know, you've got signs of movement, right? You've got things happening. There's going to be some dams coming down on the Eel River, and so I think that there is a shift in mindset about the way we're managing water and the way that we're protecting habitat for these species. But we have a long way to go. But like I said, it's inspiring and encouraging that, even given the terrible state of some of these creeks, that we've got fish showing up again. I mean, that tells us that there are things that we can do, simple things that we can do locally to rejuvenate these species.
Gonna close the store, put a note on the door. I feel like going fishing. I'll grab my pole, head for the old fishing hole. Feel like going fishing. 'Cause when the blues get you, you know they'll be with you. Head for the creek and fish all my blues away. I grabbed my hat, told my lunch in a bag. I feel like going fishing.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jeremy Miller. He is an environmental writer. And his latest piece for the Sierra Club magazine is entitled Against the Current. So, Jeremy, this template is being played out many, many times over, all over the country, all over the world, really, as we, not just with fish and salmon specifically, but wildlife encroaching upon urban life and urban life encroaching upon wild creatures. With the new reign of terror on a government level, what can we expect in terms of the continuing story of man being able to coexist with with wildlife in when it seems like our capitalist model reigns supreme in the current administration in terms of policy.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think a reign of terror is not an understatement at this point. There, you know, there's been a huge attack and unraveling of the Clean Water Act, in specifically in defining what a waterway is. There's been an effort to erode the part of the Clean Water Act that defines what a waterway is, what an ephemeral waterway is, and what a permanent waterway is. A lot of these creeks in San Jose don't flow year round or have just a minor amount of flow, and these are the creeks that are really in jeopardy. These are the creeks that are under threat, and these are also the sort of creeks that salmon want to spawn in. These are the little side tributaries where they want to spawn. So if we have a major erosion of the Clean Water Act and a attack on wetlands, an attack on ephemeral creeks, you know, if these laws keep getting eroded in the way that they are, we'll see huge consequences to species like salmon. That to them, these aren't marginal habitat. This is their habitat. This is where they spawn, in these little side channels like Silver Creek. If I'm answering your question here, I think what we need to do is really focus on these federal protections and focus on these little creeks in our neighborhoods. These aren't insignificant pieces of habitat. In the case of San Jose, this is vital habitat for a beloved and highly threatened species, and we need to do our best to protect and restore these ecosystems. And that's the good news in San Jose, is that there's effort on Los Gatos Creek, which is another small creek flowing through Campbell, through an office park area. You would never know it when you're walking along the creek that it's a huge sprawling urban area above you. And in that area, we saw dozens of salmon spawning like you would see them, you know, in the Smith River or the Klamath River in Northern California. Beautiful habitat that's slated to get better through. There's a big restoration project happening on a I think it's a half mile or mile stretch of that creek that should provide more spawning habitat. So that's a good story. That's an acknowledgement that the fish are there. That's an attempt to give them what they need, but that effort needs to be repeated across the region, across the Bay Area, across the Pacific Northwest, if we want to have any hope of restoring these populations.
The piece is Against the Current in Sierra Magazine. Environmental writer Jeremy Miller, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio, Jeremy.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the David Grisman Quintet, Corey Harris, Barnes & Barnes, and Bobby Charles. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.